Hello, I'm Royce Gomez, founder of Royce Talks, and have been recognized as a leading authority for coaching and training entrepreneurs and executives, speaking to audiences ranging from 20 to more than 1,000. My articles have been published in the Huffington Post, Unlimited Woman, and Charity Magazine. I am co-author of The Stories and Daily Habits of Highly Successful Women and international bestseller Discover Your Destiny, Live Your Dreams, Love Your Life. I have effectively coached successful business owners who were in transition, both in business and their personal life. Today, I am speaking with my guest, Shauna Tellerman. Shauna is the founder and CEO of Modsy, a home design app that allows you to visualize design ideas in the context of your own home. Previously, Shauna was a partner on the investing team at Google Ventures. Her career has focused on the intersection between design and technology, especially in the realm of 3D technology platforms. Prior to Google, Shauna was the founder and CEO of SimOps Studio and a game called Wild Pockets, a spinoff from Carnegie Mellon University that focused on 3D game development. SimOps was acquired by Autodesk in 2010, and Shauna worked there as a product line manager, responsible for launching the cloud platform and Autodesk 360 applications. In 2009, she was named one of Business Week's best young entrepreneurs. In 2012, she was featured in the book Creating Innovators by Harvard education expert Tony Wagner. And in 2014, she was named one of Silicon Valley's Business Journal Women of Influence. Today, I am so excited to bring this long-awaited conversation with Shauna to you. So, Shauna, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. There is so much to your background. I want you to rewind and take us back to how your career got started and some of the early days, please.
Sure. it's probably surprising, but my career started in painting. I was a fine art major at Carnegie Mellon. I chose Carnegie Mellon because I knew that I liked math and science, and I had an interest in computers, but I literally spent maybe 80% of my day doing large-scale oil painting as the beginning of my career.
Wow.
Yeah, a bit of an unusual start, maybe. I was really lucky. I got to see a presentation by a professor at Carnegie Mellon within the first year or two that I was there, of a class called Building Virtual Worlds, and it used very early VR technology, virtual reality technology, and very, very early versions of the HMDs, or the head-mounted displays. So they were very clunky and much bigger and heavier than Oculus is today. But I saw this class present, and I just knew that this idea of combining graphics and art and design and technology was the future, and I had to be part of it. And so I took that course while I was still in undergrad. It was a graduate-level course with a now-famous professor who very sadly passed away named Randy Pausch. He wrote a book called The Last Lecture. There's an amazing talk by him called The Last Lecture that if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend. But he, before he was diagnosed and passed away, he was just an amazing professor that was just paving the way in virtual reality and in educating young women to go into computer science. And so I took his course, and it literally changed my whole life. I decided to apply to the graduate school at Carnegie Mellon for entertainment technology, and I started my path down a career that is really about technology and about that intersection of design and tech.
Wow. So Modsy really does bring together your love for art and your background in the tech world beautifully, doesn't it?
Yes. I often tell people that Modzy now makes sense of my career. I feel like, my first company I spun right out of graduate school, not knowing what I was doing or what it meant to start a business. I moved out to Silicon Valley when I realized this is where so many of the investors are and tech startups are. It was acquired by Autodesk. Autodesk is the leader in 3D tools and produces everything from AutoCAD to 3DS Max. So I learned about product management as well as, a really amazing company culture and a company that's, deeply in the 3D space. I moved over to venture capital for a period and got to sit on the other side of the table working with entrepreneurs. And then the whole idea for Modzy came to me, and I decided I wanted to do this. And now Modzy just feels like the sum of all of those pieces finally coming together.
Now, you say that you sat on the other side in the VC world, and a lot of startup entrepreneurs seek funding, and women especially find it harder to get funding, even though research has shown that they're much more profitable as a company versus a male-owned company. So share a little bit about your background and your experience during your tenure in that world.
Yeah, I do think that we are hopefully at a pivotal moment where the numbers are beginning to change. I think that the history of why tech startups and venture capital in particular is so male-dominated sort of goes back to the number of women that were in computer science, have been in computer science, that have been encouraged to or have taken the leap to start their own tech companies. Venture capital in Silicon Valley was so heavily built on technology and technology investment, and especially computers and chips themselves. It has progressed really rapidly over the last decade to expand to a lot of different industries, and also to mean a lot more about software and to kind of leverage a lot of existing frameworks that are already out there that allow you to launch a company much faster. But it used to be that to start a business, you really had to have deep level of technical experience. You were probably doing something pretty technically sophisticated or hard, and the business you were building was kind of built around that. And the numbers tended to skew towards men who were starting those kinds of companies. They would start them, the men were also dominant in the venture capital space, and so they would fund them, and that has created, unfortunately, a bit of a network effect of, men that then were very successful, rose to, companies that went public or were acquired, they gained a lot of wealth themselves and have invested in the next generation. And there's a kind of old boys club effect that I often talk about, where mm-hmm. your buddy starts a company, you invest in your buddy's company, you went to business school with your friend, and they become a venture capitalist, you now have an in to their fund. And that is self-reinforcing and self-propelling, and women definitely have a disadvantage because they don't have as many buddies that are, starting businesses or venture capitalists. So it's really a numbers game. It has to be enough women out there starting businesses, seeing success with their businesses, enough women moving into venture capital to have the same kind of a network effect where we have a network that we can lean on to get a deal done, to seek funding, to be willing to take that first meeting when you start a new idea. And I think it doesn't show it yet in the numbers, but it feels like we're at the tipping point because of the level of interest and the number of women that I see out there starting companies.
And you said, if I understood you correctly, that a catalyst for that changing is to have access to so much software that can be utilized and open sourced for any kind of idea, which was not previously there before, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think there's a few things happening. Hopefully we will see more women with a technical background coming out with computer science degrees who are interested in starting companies, because there are absolutely still a lot of companies that will be built on sophisticated and hard technology. In fact, what we do here at Modzy is one of those. But the realm of what a tech startup is and the kinds of companies that are defined as tech startups has really broadened in the last decade. An app for food delivery, right? Like, you wouldn't have thought 10 years ago that warranted the term tech startup or venture capital funding. It would have been more of like a feature of Pizza Hut, right? I think the world in which we can leverage software to reach consumers in a new and innovative way, and the platforms for reaching consumers and scaling businesses have really multiplied, and they've compressed the timeline it takes to start a business and to scale a business, and they've created really exciting opportunities for investors. But they've also opened the playing field to a new type and a different type of entrepreneur who maybe doesn't have the same level of technical experience or interest in going that deep into chipsets or software or hardware, but instead is interested in a consumer problem and how they solve a consumer problem, but wants to leverage a technology platform to do so, like a mobile device or a social network.
Yeah. Yeah, now, Sean, I am on Mozzie's site, and as I look through that, you say that you can design your home with hundreds of products from favorite brands, and some of them on there are my favorite brands, like Crate & Barrel and West Elm, and you just have aligned yourself with quality products to go ahead and serve the customer completely. And I know that there are some startups out there that I've consulted with that look to align themselves with major brands. How did that come about? And was that an afterthought, or was that a customer-centric decision, or where'd that come from?
Yeah, very much customer-centric. So I felt very strongly from day one that if we were going to solve the problem of designing your home, that visualization was obviously a huge part of that, being able to see how things would really look in your real space before you pull the trigger and make a very expensive decision. But it was also critical that we had the variety of products that you would be considering as a consumer. And most consumers are going to shop across a handful of brands, and they're going to mix and match brands throughout their home. In some cases, you may be very happy buying something that's less expensive from Target, IKEA, Wayfair, and then you might mix it with something that is much more costly from Restoration Hardware, Crate & Barrel, Pottery Barn, et cetera. And that's the real way that most of us will end up living kind of designing our home. So we felt it was extremely important that our catalog had the breadth of retailers that our customers would shop from represented. The lucky thing, sort of intention combined with luck, the lucky part was that in furniture, there's already a system set up called Trade, where if you are a designer, an interior designer, you can shop from retailers at what they call Trade. So you can buy products as a professional at a different price than a consumer would buy, and then sell it to the consumer at the same retail price the consumer would purchase, but that allows you to take a commission. So that's how most interior designers support a portion of their business. And so that concept of Trade and signing up as a Trade partner is really well established and exists for almost every major retailer. So we didn't have to go and knock on the door of every retailer independently and strike a unique partnership. We instead got to sign up for their very standardized Trade partnership program on day one and had the breadth of retailers represented that we thought was important. And then from there, we could kind of pick off some of the top retailers that we really wanted deeper integrations with and then work on driving even deeper relationships. So we've done that with now Crate & Barrel, CB2, West Elm, and we have quite a few more that are in the works right now. But those could develop over the course of a few years rather than having to be live within the first few months.
Well, Shauna, you certainly proved that you know your customer and know how they shop and what they're looking for, because you identified the way I know that my friends and I all shop, and we do pick and choose from different stores to create a look, and it can be very expensive not to actually see the furniture in the space that we're hoping it's going to fit. So I wasn't planning on asking this, but I do know that defining your customer avatar is so important for a startup company. And since you've proven that you can do that, are there any tips that you have out there for startups trying to validate their market?
It's a great question, and thank you for saying that you feel like we've done it well. I feel like we still have room to improve. I do think we have a strong testing philosophy. We have spent time testing the idea for Modzy with a potential customer from literally the day after I started the company, and it was just an idea. I started paper prototyping. Actually, I started just surveying people to try to understand, was I headed down the right track? And so the more you speak to potential customers, the more you learn. And I do think that helped us narrow in on the right segment of customer. You know, we started to realize that it was primarily going to skew towards couples that were 30 plus years old. 30 to about 55 is sort of the target range. The reason was that we found they were going through a lot of, it could be individuals, but was often married couples. They were going through a lot of life changes that prompt you to redesign and buy furniture. And mm-hmm. those moments of moving in together, buying a home, having a first kid, having your kid move into a teenage room or move out, those are all moments where you're making a pretty significant investment in the design and look of a space. Again, we've had younger customers, and we've had, much older customers. There's not any boundaries to it, but we realized that those were that was the segment that was out there searching. And that allowed us to start to focus in on that group. The second part was that we started to realize that there is definitely, sort of disposable income and a budget element to this. So we did not target the high end of the market where many interior designers target, where you're going to be spending many tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of dollars on furniture. We were really targeting more of what I call like a middle-class segment, sort of your working professional who's going to be shopping at mostly retail brands and could be spending anywhere from a couple thousand dollars to maybe $10,000 to $15,000, but they probably would even break that up over the course of a few months. And so that helped us define, what the household income was that we would be targeting. So those were the two things that we sort of stumbled across by spending a lot of time talking to customers. But now within that, we're trying to get even more sophisticated, and I think we have a good long path to go.
That's an excellent answer. Thank you so much for being detailed with that. I had the opportunity to interview the Women of Influence recipients for the Colorado Springs Market on my show, and so you can find all of those episodes on Thrive, A Woman's Journey to Victory. But you were honored with the Silicon Valley Business Journal's Women of Influence, and you've been recognized by Business Week. I know that those high-level recognitions did not come without some adversity and some just jumping through and over and around obstacles to get to where you are today. So share a little bit about a time when you had to really push through something tough and rely on your inner drive and your tenacity to succeed.
It's a great question. And, I've had many, many of those times in my career.
I'm sure.
As you mentioned, striving for something new or innovative definitely comes with a lot of bumps in the road. It's interesting, while the both startups that I've done had a lot of really hard obstacles, and I could spend a lot of time there. Ironically, the hardest career moment for me was when I was in venture capital. And it really, goes back to what we were talking about before. I became so acutely aware of the lack of females, both in getting funded and starting businesses in comparison to men, and not just females, minorities as well, certain minorities, but that, then also venture capital. It was just, you know, it's very, very heavily male field. And I had spent most of my career in tech and, you know, at Carnegie Mellon, computer science. Like, these industries aren't games. These are not industries that are heavily female. And yet venture capital was like getting punched in the face. I felt like a big outsider from day one. And sitting around the partnership meeting, discussing companies and investments, and trying to kind of understand my place, was probably the biggest setback I had in my entire career. I couldn't find my footing. I didn't really know my place. I felt really different than everybody around me. I was struggling to understand what even the career is. It's a hard career because you're making very arbitrary decisions. And my point of view was distinctly different than those people around me. And so I really struggled. And the struggle of not knowing whether I was respected or how to present my ideas made me lose confidence. And that was just kind of this downward spiral. So that year and a half, 2 years in venture was really, really, really hard for me. The only reason I think I kind of came out of it was I started to spend a lot of time reaching out to amazing women. I found amazing women in venture capital, amazing women starting businesses, and I pulled together happy hours. I went to meet them for drinks and lunch. I started kind of a yearly group outing. That building that network really kind of rebuilt a bit of my confidence and made me feel not like I was not alone. I had a couple of great, of good successes in terms of companies that I found that I was excited about that I did get through the partnership, and that built a little bit of confidence too. And then, but then I moved into a house with my husband and had this idea for Mozzie, and it was like being on a springboard. I like leaped into a whole different place when I started thinking about starting another business. And so I realized a lot about myself, but I also recognized that you can kind of dig yourself out of a really tough time.
Well, thanks for being so transparent and sharing. And I'm shocked, actually, that being at the same level of business expertise and having the same level of success did not disseminate some of those feelings of feeling left out. And like you said, you even made decisions from a distinctly different perspective as a female, and that stood out more than having similar or equal success in business. So thanks for sharing. Well, before we find out where you're at in your life now and where things are going for you, I want to thank my sponsors because the show would not be possible without them. So we're going to take just a moment for a commercial break. My first sponsor is Pivot Business Consulting. Pivot Business Consulting facilitates training and coaching in leadership development, team communication, team building, and process improvement. Intern Pursuit, a subsidiary of Pivot, matches students to employers like Match.com using a proprietary algorithm and assessments, helping employers document interns' tasks. To find out more, contact Pivot Business Consulting at 321-422-2166 or online at pivotbusinessconsulting.com. My second sponsor is Sociotech Academy. Sociotech Academy recognizes that we need a movement that finds the balance between technological advances and the ability of social frameworks to adapt to them. The rapid spread of infotech in each and every phase of our lives and the dependence of social communities on it has happened without the development of education and regulatory models in a timely fashion. To find out more about Sociotech Academy, go online at socio-tech.org or call them at 719-445-7101 and I want to thank both Sociotech Academy and Pivot Business Consulting for making Thrive a Woman's Journey to Victory possible. And now I want to welcome back my guest, Shanna Tellerman, and find out what's going on in your career and your business now. Shanna, are you still there?
I'm still here, yeah, and it's a great question. We are at a really exciting moment with the business. We've been live on the market for about a year and a half. We just raised a new round of capital at the end of 2017, so we're starting 2018.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, with our Series B, a new board member, Courtney Robinson from ABP, and then a really fantastic and exciting roadmap for this year. So we're focused on some big improvements to the product itself, features and capabilities that we're going to continue to add to make it a really amazing and excellent experience. And then alongside that, we're focused on expanding the strategic partnerships. And so that lives in the realm of both retailers that we work with. So like I mentioned, Crate & Barrel, West Elm, we're going to continue to expand retailers and the kinds of integrations we do there. We're also going to keep doing some really, really cool integrations with television. We did a deep integration into a Bravo TV show, Cyrus versus Cyrus, last year. And Comcast and NBCU also participated as investors in our last round, and we have some really exciting things underway for this year to continue to do more TV integration. So this year is kind of partially continue to invest in our platform and products, and then partially to really expand and grow the brand awareness.
How exciting.
Yeah, it's a fun moment.
Well, I know that I work with startup entrepreneurs on a regular basis, and many of our listeners out there are startup entrepreneurs. And I would love for you to share some words of wisdom that you have for those who have walked a similar journey or can see themselves in a position that you've accomplished.
I think my best words of wisdom is to just stay the course. I think what happens when you're starting a business of any kind is that you have so many tough days, and there's so many days where you wake up and you think, is this really going to happen? Is it really working? And things feel like they're going wrong. And then you have the opposite. You have those days that you wake up and you're flying high and so you're so excited. And you know, and you don't often sit in the middle. And so somewhere in the center of gravity for you, somewhere deep in the pit of your stomach is that thing that allows you to kind of keep getting up. You get up every day and you just keep going after it. And you have to rely on that part, on those hard days when there's a part of your mind saying, like, should I really even be doing this?
Yep. Been there.
Exactly. Like, I'm a runner. Like, they say sometimes when you don't feel like running, you just put on your shoes and you tell yourself you're going to go outside and, like, take five steps. But, like, putting on the shoes, you get outside, you take five steps, you're pretty much certain you're going to take another five steps. So you sometimes have to kind of dig into that same sort of go-getter, like, I'm going to just make this happen even though I don't feel like it. Drive that's sitting deep in your pit, and just like you just get up day after day to try to make it happen. And so that, knowing that that's common and knowing that you're going to lean on that, I think that helps me a lot and hopefully would help other founders.
Absolutely. And like you said, there's never a feeling in the middle. I mean, you're either all in or you're so discouraged you can barely get out of bed.
Exactly. we call it the roller coaster. And in fact, I mean, my whole company, we're about 50 employees now. Many of them feel it, right? Because we have these really high times, and then we have these really low times. And so we just talk about the roller coaster ride. And as long as, like, directionally, you can see a trend line headed the right way, you're feeling good. But day to day, it can really feel emotionally draining.
Absolutely. Well, I've so enjoyed having you on the show, and I know that we could talk for hours about the startup world and your particular achievements. But Shauna, we're at the end of our segment here, and I just want to give someone a chance to connect with you after the show if they found anything at all inspiring. So where can they find out more about you and your company online?
Absolutely. So best place to find me, I'm on Twitter, at Shauna, S-H-A-N-N-A-W-P. And then you can find all kinds of things about Modsy, modsy.com, M-O-D-S-Y.com, or at Modsy on Twitter. If you want to see some of the beautiful images, Instagram is an awesome place to follow us. That's Modsy Design on Instagram.
And they are gorgeous. You've done an amazing job of providing a solution for those of us who are refurnishing our house and want to have the right furniture in the right place. So thank you so much for spending time with me on Thrive, A Woman's Journey to Victory. And I wish you so much success in the future, Shauna.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure. Well, as we close out this show, you can find me and connect with me online at roycetalks.com or on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn if you search for Royce Gomez. Thanks so much for joining us on Thrive, A Woman's Journey to Victory, and we'll be bringing you more stories of successful women who have overcome adversity very soon.